Hi, everyone. I'm Jennifer Vine, President and CEO of the Education Foundation of Sarasota County and your host for Education Conversations, where we share ideas on education today and ways to help prepare students to thrive. I want to thank the Community Foundation of Sarasota County for its longstanding support for the Education Foundation and certainly for today's podcast. Welcome, everyone, to Education Conversations, Artificial Intelligence in Education. So you can already tell that we're lifting up the level of conversation we have here, and we've got a really spectacular guest that's going to help us kind of navigate this conversation. As you all know, AI, artificial intelligence, the terminology kind of works interchangeably, is getting a lot of attention these days. And it seems that people are both excited and somewhat maybe reserved, concerned perhaps about it. And so we're going to learn today how AI really is not new. It's been a tool that's been around. Early adopters, certainly like Dr. Rebecca Hines, has been embracing that for a long time. And we're going to see how its use has actually been embraced and used in education. And so our guest today, as I just teed up, is Dr. Rebecca Hines. Sometimes I may call her Becky, just so you know. We're going to go back and forth. She's a very accomplished professor and is familiar with the AI tools that she's been using in her classroom. She's also written papers on the use of AI in teacher education, and she has a specific focus and interest in AI's potential in special education. So that's going to be really exciting to learn about this. She is an associate professor in special education at the University of Central Florida. Go Knights. Should I say that?
Go Knights.
Exactly. Go Knights. My son graduated from UCF, so I do have an affinity there. And her research interests include teacher preparation, working with students with emotional and behavioral disorders, inclusion, and technology integration. So I know I'm excited about learning more about AI and everything that Rebecca's going to share with us. So Rebecca, welcome to Education Conversations.
Thank you, Jennifer. Glad to be here.
I'm glad you made the drive from Orlando, coming all the way here to speak to us. I don't know. It's anytime on the road now for me, I'm like, oh my gosh, that's far. But let's go ahead and get back on the topic. And I want to start by learning about your career trajectory and kind of how it brought you to where you are today. And I understand you've worked pretty much in every level of education. So tell us a little bit about your progression and how it brought you to the intersection of special education and technology.
Oh, a windy path. So like a lot of us, Jennifer, I, as an undergraduate, needed to work, had to make money. I knew I loved kids, and I was originally working as a paraprofessional in PE at just a typical, neighborhood school. Loved it. But one of my friends came to work one day to find me, and she said, Becky, listen, you got to come and interview for this job where I work. And I'm like, well, I'm happy where I am. She goes, no, it's going to be so much fun. Just come there because we'll be working together. I'm 20 years old. I'm like, great, work with my friend, sure. But I go to the school where she was working, and I walk in and I realize very quickly that these were not the kind of kids that I was used to and trained to work with. These were students with severe and profound disabilities. Some of them couldn't speak. Some of them were laying in a bed all day. It was just very different from my experience. And so as I walked through that school, all I could see were the differences, And I was like, oh, I can't do this job. Like, I don't know what I would be doing. Like, I don't understand these people because it was no part of my background. And I went home that day and, I had told her I didn't think I could do it. And I went home that night and I was like, oh my gosh. Why can't I? Like, why wouldn't I? And so I went back for another visit, and I just made myself see that school and those kids differently. Mm. And I decided it'd just be a great challenge for me to go and work there. So I went from, again, still just an assistant, just a kid working my way through college, but I had such an opportunity at such a young age to see education at its really foundational level, both in learning types, in types of students, and also just at the school level. So I graduated with my degree in English education. And actually, I was a teacher down here in Port Charlotte as an English teacher, a middle school English teacher. It was the most fun job I've ever had. But I wanted to be frankly, more marketable, mm-hmm. if I'm being honest. Mm-hmm. So I got my master's in special ed. You know, I thought, well, let me learn something else. And I really fell in love with working with kids with severe emotional behavioral disorders. Mm-hmm. And so I did that in St. Pete for a while. I loved that job, but the rewards were very different. Mm-hmm. So, you know, over the course of my public school career, I was just back and forth between populations of kids and types of work. And I just kept looking at and training myself to see similarities instead of differences. Mm. So when I went into higher ed, you know, got my PhD, ended up teaching in higher ed, my mission kind of became helping teachers to see the sameness, you know, the sameness in kids. Mm-hmm. And that's a kind of a circuitous route, you know, to your question. In working on that myself, mm-hmm. and now in years of preparing people with that mindset, it's about access. I realize that everyone deserves access to the same thing in education, mm-hmm. and the support to get as much of that as they possibly can. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what your innate ability is. You deserve access to the best teaching, to the best tools, to the best environment, whether or not you can fully demonstrate what you're getting from it. Mm-hmm. So accessibility and access just became kind of my expertise, if you will. Mm-hmm. And technology definitely plays fully into that.
We have seen that so much, just as an aside, at the Education Foundation, as we award teacher grants, we will see requests come in for technology for adaptive learning that is just really so impressive, particularly when it comes from the ESE, exceptional education teachers in special education. Right. So I just acknowledge that as well, being a layperson, if you will. I'm kind of like one foot into education, certainly have some background in it, but it's, I see it from what the teachers are requesting. So I acknowledge that. The second thing I want to just give you a shout out for is recognizing the belief that we really hold dear and true. And that is every child has the ability to learn and succeed. Right. And so I love special education. I really do. And so let's kind of get to more of how did AI come into the presence of this. So you took us to the technology. So then how did you start to introduce the concept and the tools available through artificial intelligence? And how did that intersect with your teaching?
Well, what I've seen across 40 years now in this profession is that making things accessible to kids with disabilities is far more difficult in the past, far more difficult than it seems on its surface. You just mentioned funding tools, funding AT devices. The hard thing about assistive technology is there's such a low demand for it mm-hmm. by design. So it's really expensive. So a school district, a family who needs a specific type of support for their child often might invest $1,000 in something in the hope that it will have an impact.
Right.
Especially, I'm going to, even though AI itself has been around since the 60s, mm-hmm. it's been on the forefront increasingly with the advent of things like, you know, a smartphone. Mm-hmm. Because a smartphone, by design, is an AI-operated mm-hmm. tool. Mm-hmm. So early in the 2010s, I really started looking into how those personal devices could be used to customize access for every learner. And they can. And I was talking about this with teachers across the country and trying to get them just to do the smallest thing, like voice to text. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a hard sell sometimes. You know, flash forward 15 years and voice to text, voice recognition is the smallest part of kind of AI that we use. But AI to me means access and more specifically, customization. Mm-hmm. So if you try something and it doesn't work, it can easily be customized. And more importantly, the more sophisticated the AI tools are, the less any human has to do the customization. And I'm not trying to take humans out of the loop of education right. by any stretch. However, teachers need support in figuring out, what do I do for this learner who has X, Y, or Z problem? And now there's AI tools to help them figure that out.
Right. Oh, that's really fascinating. And I love how you're really customizing it. So it's pulling out the way in which we can optimize the student's ability to learn and succeed. It's not so much about a focus on disabilities or behavioral challenges. I mean, I think all that gets for me, I just think it has a negative bias, but how you're presenting it is that we can really adapt all of these different tools to optimize that student. So can you give me some additional examples of ways in which you've seen success in customizing those things?
So one of the things that's pretty common now, if you go on the phone company, if you go to any bank, you know, there's always a little virtual assistant, a little chatbot who pops up. It's actually not that hard to create a chatbot these days. You can go online and say, oh, I want to create a chatbot. It will give you tons of resources to create your own chatbot. Many of them that run on the same platform and foundation that ChatGPT does. But in these custom chatbots, AI assistants, if you will, you can control where they're pulling their information from. Okay, so if I'm a teacher and I know a student needs supports, but I don't want him getting all of these other ones, I can create an AI assistant. They're not always free. but they're definitely doable. And believe me, in the scope of things, a value add. You know, for example, one of my doctoral students last year, we were talking about, oh my gosh, ChatGPT is great, but we have all of these kids at this one school that we're working with. And the teachers who just want ways to support kids, but they have to read through all of these responses that come in. So we were like, oh, you know what? I said, I wish I had a tool that really filtered that out for teachers. So if they wanted to know, how do I add a modification to a second grade math multiplication? I don't know what you teach in second grade. math, you know, lesson for a student who is blind. What do I do? And really, I came back the next week, like, Tiffany and I were meeting online the following week, and she's like, oh, Dr. Hines, I've created one for you. So if you want to go try it. And I went the next week, I was talking to some teachers in North Georgia, and I showed them that. And in an instant, every teacher in the room, 50 teachers, could customize a lesson for a specific student in their classroom. And that's a level of detail that usually feels undoable for the average teacher. Gosh, it's a lot of extra planning, but also it's at your fingertips. So these types of interfaces, making things simple. And I have tons of tools like that, that, you know, I also use in trying to train teachers, but it starts as small as that.
Yeah. And you recently published a paper that really spoke about the past, present, and future use of artificial intelligence. And so does your paper kind of reference everything you were just describing?
Yes.
Is there any other angle that can...
So actually, Dr. Zaug's tool is referenced in there, and I'm pretty sure we must have included the link to that. Well, one of my favorite tools these days is called Notebook LM. Now, what Notebook LM will do, it will let me pull in an article, a website, images, a wide variety of resources, and then I can have that all condensed into one thing, maybe a summary of notes. So if I'm a high school teacher and I'm teaching kids and it includes a class that has some students with learning disabilities, for example. So instead of reading this long article and instead of me going through and summarizing, it'll give you things in a list. It will give you things as study notes. It will create a really well-rounded learning package around all the materials you pull in. One of my favorite things about that one, that particular tool will also auto-generate audio that sounds like a podcast just like this.
Oh, my.
So it will be two people discussing those concepts using natural language.
Right.
Which would be so much more consumable for the kids, for all kids, anyone who chose to listen to it and have that information in two different ways. Some kids would use it. Some kids need it to have access to the information. And even those kids with significant disabilities, as I was mentioning before, why wouldn't we want them, again, no matter their circumstance or their ability level, why wouldn't we want them to at least have that audio playing so they are having access to the same content as everyone else? It doesn't matter if they can demonstrate what they learned from it. I believe they deserve access to it.
I think that's just, it's fascinating, truly. And it makes me actually think of brain development and everything else.
Right.
It really kind of leans into
schema theory.
Yes.
Right.
I mean, so it's really quite interesting. So I know that you have a deep interest in access and inclusion. And again, you look at this through a different lens. You believe that it's not about students achieving the same things, but it's more about equity in the opportunity. So you've been kind of touching on that, you know, throughout kind of in your commentary. So is there any other way in which you would want to frame that to our listeners who are listening in today?
One of the things I want to stress is that access doesn't mean that you're giving your highest flyers less. It means you're giving everyone more. When I'm working with teachers, I am constantly asking them, no matter, you know, every time we're talking, I say, well, be sure you're also looking for an extension exercise for your classroom, because you may have kids who need something more. And honestly, Jennifer, it's one of the things I see in schools. Everyone's really, you know, they understand we need to make changes or you know, accommodations, whatever the teacher perceives that mm-hmm. as. And sometimes they have confused that with making things more for the middle. Customization means giving everyone what he or she needs. And for the ones who we cannot assess what it is that they need, giving them the content that everyone else has. So one of the things that I see besides the need for extension is a need for more interaction in mm-hmm. classrooms, okay? So this is where the AI gets tricky also, because I'm not suggesting that AI tools replace human interaction.
Right.
I'm saying that these AI tools can take the artifice out of our profession. Mm-hmm. All of the time we spend doing tasks and open up our time as teachers to having rich conversations with every student at his or her level.
Yeah, and leveraging the technology that's available to personalize
exactly.
learning for every student in the classroom. And it's very different than back in the day. I hate saying that because it makes you sound aged, but back in the day where you really had to turn your full attention to one or two students.
Right.
Now you're creating personalized options and availability to all. What's the, just to play devil's advocate then, what are some of the biggest challenges that AI has in terms of education? Is it coming from the user's end, or are there real dangers and concerns that we need to be watching for?
I think it's like anything else with technology. You know, it's like when our kids are on social media, when our kids are doing anything else, you're always open to the forces out there that know how to manipulate those environments. I don't think AI is any more dangerous than Google, than anything else. The biggest danger is always personal information, personally identifying information, et cetera. It is one of the reasons that I, at this stage, and tech grows so fast, things become outdated very quickly. But it's one of the reasons that I do think, yeah, having those customized personal assistants that you are filtering things out is one example of ways that we can help protect kids. Mm-hmm. But I don't see AI in and of itself being the problem. It's just another tool. And people made the same arguments against all kinds of technology for so long. I was in the 90s, I was working in a school in Missouri. I was a faculty member up at Southeast Missouri State. And I was working with a local school. And I said, well, I'm going to come and do a computer club for your kids with emotional behavioral disorders as a way to propel them into being experts in something at your school and change their attitudes. Mm-hmm. And he's like, technology? These computers aren't going to be around long. I'm like, oh, okay. And I said, well, you know what? Does that telephone on your desk work? And he's like, yeah. I said, you know what? Here's the thing. That telephone meets a need. I guarantee you, when people were developing the telephone, other people were saying, oh, that's terrible. It's going to do this. I said, but that telephone's not going away. The concept of communicating with each other remotely using some invisible waves of something, it's not going away.
Right.
And I think it's the same with AI, you know, and not only is AI not going away, some of the latest stuff that we're working on. And again, people might love it or hate the idea of it, but, you know, we've been working with biometrics. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a study right now where somebody looking at a video of problem behaviors connected to a Bluetooth device that measures whether or not that behavior is causing them to have a spike in their heart rate and causing them stress can initiate a remedy for that.
Right.
So that the person can automatically, just by the information that's being brought in through these biometrics, now I can have a customized professional development based on what I need. Because this is causing me stress, you know, because even with teachers, one size doesn't fit all. We don't all need the same
thing.
Very
true.
So there's a lot of potential. The customization is across ages, abilities, professions. And I really want to encourage, you know, my colleagues in education to remember, let's not leave our kids behind by not embracing something that has so much potential.
Yeah, it really does. And I appreciate your futuristic mindset. I think that you have carried that through, if you know, because you can see the things that are happening and where it's all evolving and where things are going. So to see the incorporation of the potential of biometrics, I mean, that's just in the not so distant future.
It's right now. That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Jennifer, people don't realize that we have the technology and have had it for a long time to literally customize those, you know, scary statewide tests. A student could sit down with a learning disability and not need 1,000 accommodations because the computer can very easily recognize error patterns.
Right.
The computer could, if we wanted to use it this way, recognize stress or distress.
That would be amazing.
Could make tons of changes automatically.
Right.
To accommodate that test taker.
Gosh. And I do know that there's also AI being used for just reinforced learning, you know, tutoring and
Absolutely.
Using assistance like that. And I think that's phenomenal to
Absolutely.
See how that's the onset of development.
Right. Because everything can be assessed immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And one term that has really been the most, I think, game-changing, if you will, is natural language. Because you see, this has existed, this machine learning, this ability to take information and et cetera. But it's been much more recently that we have been able to turn it into natural language so that it's not just a bunch of numbers and stuff coming at us. You know, AI can produce, you know, written word, spoken word that sounds very natural, and it becomes a much easier to digest type of support, I think.
Wow, this is fascinating. So we're out of time. I have so enjoyed you sharing with our listeners today about everything that you're working on, that you've published, and just your progress throughout your tenure, but you know, always in education. Thank you for how you're supporting all of the different students and the learners that we have in our community. So really, this has just been a fascinating topic, and I'm thrilled that you are going to be leading a session tomorrow for us with an education roundtable topic that we've invited some of our Sarasota County School teachers to attend. And just know that these are spaces and places that we continue to open up so that we can have enriched learning and understanding of some various things that are relevant to what is happening in education today. So thanks for your time in all fronts to supporting our work. And listeners, I hope you enjoyed today's conversation, and certainly always welcome you to learn more about the Education Foundation. You can visit us at our website at edfoundationsrq.org. And to thanks again to the Community Foundation of Sarasota County for your support on this podcast, and to all of our listeners for listening in. So be sure to tune in to other episodes of Education Conversations. We got a lot of relevant topics on the pipeline here. So for now, this is Jennifer Vine signing off for the Education Foundation of Sarasota County.